Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for May 12th. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be with you until 2 p.m. Our producer and the man in charge of all things technical is Mr. John Stout, and his will be the first voice you'll hear when you call us today at 434-1790. Of course, you can communicate with us as usual via WhatsApp, and it's working, so please communicate with us at 266-4862. I'll say that slowly, 266-4862. For those wondering why Peter's not here, he'll be here, I think, next week. So you can look out for him at that time. Today, we have a pretty special program for you. If you recall yesterday, we had General Surgeon Dr. Maurice Warren on, and he voiced a number of concerns that we want to deal with. In fact, we have on the line a number of officials from the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and I'll be introducing them very shortly to you. But for the time being, what we'll do first is we'll give you a play clip from what Dr. Waldron said yesterday. Here goes.
What is it that you have been calling for? What is it that is required to make it safe?
First, to make it safe, we want to be in a operating theater that meets the minimum standard. Second thing, the ventilation system is very important, where we want the theater to be able to take any virus that may be in the air and extract it outside the facility rather than push it into the facility, which may infect unsuspecting staff that are inside. The second thing about it is that it should have a ventilation system that can exchange the air in the operating theater a certain amount of times per hour. Normally what we talk about is 20 times per hour. What that does is allow the virus to be filtered out quickly so that if it is expressed into the air, that within a matter of minutes, it can come down to a level that we think is safe once we have the proper protective equipment being used.
So explain for us how this system would normally work. You say you need to be able to expel the air as distinct from, explain how that whole system. As I understand it, there's this concept of negative pressure and positive pressure. So average people would need to understand what that is about.
All right. So there's this negative and positive pressure. To put it in layman's terms, normally in an operating theater, the patient is in the middle of the operating theater and you want all the airflow to be going away from the patient because the patient is the clean source and anything on the outside is dirty, is how we approach it. So most operating theaters are designed to be positive pressure, where they actually take the air in the operating theater and push that air to the outside and doesn't allow outside air to come in. Now, if you have a patient who's infected with a aerosolized virus, as COVID-19 can do, you don't want that. The patient in the middle is the infected part, and therefore you want it to be negative pressure, that all the air in that operating theater is not pushed out to the rest of the facility, but sucked out the operating theater to a safe place.
So,
and there you have it. We'll play another clip a little later, but basically, Dr. Waldron was complaining about the air quality and the whole problem related to COVID. We have on the line Mr. David Ellis, who was the moderator for that program. And David, can you just bring us up to date with this whole conversation that you had with Dr. Maurice Warren yesterday?
Well, it wasn't just with Dr. Warren, because in all of these circumstances, good morning to all, you need to have some measure of balance. And we sought to establish that by having the deputy chair of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital on the air with Dr. Warren at the same time yesterday, and that is Dr. Abdul Mohammed. His argument was the complete opposite of what Dr. Warren was saying. My recollection, though, is that he did say that it could deal with the facility at Enmore, and this is really where the focus was, because, as you know, the policy position is that the authorities are trying to keep the Queen Elizabeth Hospital COVID-free. And therefore, in the effort to make sure that there is no situation where there is a spread of COVID to other parts of the hospital, they've sought to isolate that and have gone in the direction, according to what we were told yesterday, of creating this facility, upgrading the facility out there and more to be able to accommodate this. Now, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital called us yesterday afternoon after the program, and they wanted to talk about this and related matters because, you know, this is a rather interesting period. We have never had anything like this before. And along the way, it's an opportunity to see how our system has worked, what are the lessons learned so far. So they have asked us to accommodate some officials today, and those officials are online with us. But as you well know, we must be guided by the concept of balance and fairness. And in the same way that we had Dr. Mohammed on yesterday when Dr. Walran spoke, we also have Dr. Walran on standby. He will determine if and when he wants to speak in this conversation. So it is going to be a discussion that's not just about the surgical facilities for COVID patients, but a bit wider. Naturally, therefore, we anticipate that we will start off with that. So over to you, Sankar.
Thank you, David. And we have on the line Dr. Corey Ford. Good morning, Dr. Ford.
Good morning.
And we also have Dr. Clyde Cave. Good morning, Dr. Cave. Long time no hear.
Good morning, sir.
Good. And you can just remind us, but I think, Dr. Ford, you are still the head of disease control at the QEH?
Yeah, I'm head of infectious.
Infection control, sorry. And sorry, I didn't hear that.
Infection prevention and control.
Infection prevention and control. And, of course, we have Dr. Clyde Cave, who is in charge of...
Well, I am a pediatrician by training, which is where a lot of my public profile has been to date, but I'm now the director of medical services.
Correct.
So all the medical services at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital now currently fall under my portfolio.
All right. Well, we have a number of questions here that we'd like to put to you. And well, one very simple question, based on what Dr. Walran said, I'm just wondering, was any surgeon asked for any input into the conversion of the Enmore Center for Surgery?
Yes, certainly, if that's directed to me. And perhaps we have gone really into details from the discussion yesterday. So let me step back a little bit. And first, thank you for the invitation to speak with your audience. The public trust is an issue which I take very seriously. And when individuals air concerns in the national arena, I think we need to discuss it. If you wanted to start with input for the Enmore facility, I think we should start at the beginning when COVID was first realized as becoming a threat to the nation. An overall plan had to be put in place, and central to that plan is keeping the Queen Elizabeth Hospital COVID-free. This is a very important principle because at this time, with limited spread within the nation and the community, the majority of people in the country and therefore in the hospital are COVID-free. And the numbers to be protected are much more so the COVID-negative population. But obviously arrangements have to be made for those people who are affected. And the major arrangements for those people who are affected have had to be with the intensive care units and the facilities that have been stood up in record time at Harrison Point. One of the deficiencies early on recognized was in the rare event that somebody with COVID needed to have surgery, where was that going to happen? Now, bringing a COVID-positive patient into the Queen Elizabeth Hospital poses a risk to staff and all the other patients. This has been central to the plan. It is not agreed to by all, including some of the surgeons who you have heard from. But there are alternatives to providing surgery other than jeopardizing all the patients in the hospital. At the beginning, the only place in the country that that could be done was in the stat room at accident and emergency, where the airflow had been reconfigured to make that a safer space. Other things were looked at, including inputs from all the surgical practices at the hospital. The head of the departments, obviously not individual surgeons, because their heads of departments speak to that. What we have come up with is we are now in possession of a facility that is better than just the emergency stat room in accident and emergency. It's a reconverted isolation room over at Enmore. One of the big things initially, which you spent a lot of time on your program discussing, the intricacies of positive and negative pressure airflow, and those negative pressures don't exist in the rest of the island, so we were asking for something new, and we have provided a space now that has the requisite negative pressures. So, of course, the surgeons have been consulted. In fact, that standing up of the Enmore facility has gone through, I believe, now 3 different attempts at adding on to make it better and better, all in consultation with the users. So this is not new. What you're hearing is somebody whose opinion was voiced, but in the grand plan, not agreed with, and they have never decided to get on board with this play. But other surgeons have, so much so that we have had an individual practice, a simulation, so that I can tell you that unlike the unfortunate occurrence that happened in Jamaica, where for suspicion of COVID, a mother's life was lost, here in Barbados, we have a plan so that if there's a suspicion of a COVID-positive mother, there's a facility to deliver them over at Enmore, and this has been practiced by the pediatricians and the obstetricians in a scenario that goes as far as cesarean section. And it's been found that we have obstetricians and anesthetists who have agreed that we can do up to cesarean sections in that facility. Of course, it's not going to be as good as the entire Queen Elizabeth suite. If money was no object and if pigs could fly, we could create a similar facility to what we have in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital for that eventuality where if it needed to be done. What we have at the moment is upgrading a theater space that is admittedly small, cannot accommodate massive amounts of people or equipment, and therefore the most complex surgeries cannot be done. But yes, we did have agreement from the head of the Department of Surgery that basic surgeries could indeed be performed there, and there have been additional alterations since then. So, you know, the presentation that you have made, while very detailed and having some concerns, does not represent the current state of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
Well, just let me ask you this question. Why was the decision taken to retrofit the Enmore facility, which was not set up for surgery in the first place, instead of using...
Okay, so that when or why?
I'm asking, why was the decision taken to retrofit the Enmore facility instead of using the Lions Eye Care Center, which was fully... It has functional theaters and was recently refurbished and is not being used. And my understanding is that it has a separate unit and air conditioner from the QEH in a separate block, and its entrances and exits can be sealed and regulated. So
now, I know that there are a lot of armchair specialists who can look at reconfiguring every decision that was made. That was certainly one that was looked at closely. Now, the Lions Eye Care building is not separate from the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. In fact, that whole block shares amenities, not just of patient flow, but of air conditioning and other facilities. And while everybody's work is the most important thing to them, in the grand picture, we would have to displace services there. And for the potential of COVID-affected people requiring surgery, we would have to put a halt to all the cardiovascular interventions, so the population in Barbados with heart disease would be disserviced, as would the patients who needed eye surgery. So it's not as simple. It was looked at. It's not ready for surgery. That also would have to be retrofitted, and retrofitted in a place that compromised the greater hospital. So that's why the decision that the Queen Elizabeth Hospital is to remain COVID-free, and you can't just section off a part of it for your convenience and say, this will work. So we then looked at other alternatives, and there were private facilities in Belleville that were looked at, and two things came into: how do we retrofit those? And there was a cost and a time involved to both of them. So to get things up for the eventuality of an outbreak of cases, which thank goodness has not occurred, we had to work with the fastest thing that we could bring online, and also with the money that was being spent. The facility at Enmore now has the potential after COVID to be used for other things, like addressing minor surgeries for which we have a backlog. So the decision was that coming from nothing that was suitable and improving on the accident and emergency stat room, we would now have a facility that was better able to deal with surgical emergencies. So that's why that site was chosen. There's also ongoing discussions for alternatives that could be used that are not within the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, but we're toying with what we have and saying, why not use that instead of coming up with workable plans for improving and maybe getting another facility? And to speak to that, there has been discussion about getting a purpose-built portable operating theater, perhaps to be located at Harrison Point or somewhere else. That's several months away and several million dollars. Mm-hmm. In the interim, what we have now is a space for operating on that is not ideal, but a lot better than we were, and addresses all the concerns about air pressure that were first the moot point under discussion. That air pressure situation has been resolved. We're now talking about the comfort of people operating there, and we have some surgeons who have agreed that it is possible for them to operate there.
All right, Dr. Cave, let's take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
This COVID-19 update is brought to you with the compliments of Massey Properties, ProClean. We specialize in AC duct cleaning and air quality testing. Call us at 429-5686.
Efforts to get rid of the excess number of pigs which local farmers have been stuck with due to a lesser demand during the COVID-19 crisis are proving to be successful. Last week, local pig farmers said they may be forced to slaughter and bury pigs since pork was not selling in great quantities at this time. However, Managing Director of A1 Supermarkets, Andrew Bino, came on board to assist the farmers in getting the pork off their hands by slashing prices on the product in his supermarkets. The sale, which commenced yesterday, saw long lines at both branches.
We should be back fully stocked for Wednesday. So we're very pleased with the response that we got from the public. Of course, it isn't something that we can prolong, because the farmers are really selling at a loss, but they've done this to clear their stocks at the moment.
Welcome back to Brass Tacks. This is Sanka Price with you, along with John Stout. And for those who have just joined us, we are discussing an issue that was raised yesterday. That is a group of general surgeons at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and management are basically at loggerheads over the standard of equipment being used, the whole operating, the choice of operating theater, and they're basically be having this discussion about it. We have on the line the director of medical services, Dr. Clyde Cave. We also have the infection and disease prevention control, Dr. Corey Ford, online. And we're hoping soon to have Dr. Maurice Warren. In fact, he is online now, and he raised the issue yesterday. We also have Mr. David Ellis, who will chime in at any time and ask a question. First of all, Dr. Warren, good morning.
Good morning.
Good. You heard the response from Dr. Cave. Would you like to respond to that before we ask another question?
I would like to respond to that.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Cave has suggested using the term surgeon, that because one set of surgeons got input and not another, that if one sector is okay, it is okay. Let's just first dispel that myth. He is referring, and mentioned it, to obstetrics and gynecology. There is a department of surgery which has many specialties, more than general surgery. It has general surgery, it has neurosurgery, it has urology, plastic surgery, etc. So it is the biggest body of surgeons in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. Again, the simulation that they say was done was done only for an obstetric and gynecology and pediatric scenario, and surgeons were not invited. So to try and take a small subset in obstetrics and gynecologists and mask it as, if these surgeons are okay, why are they not, the others not okay, I think is not fair. Secondly, just to point out, if obstetrics and gynecology gets into problems in surgery, it is us that they call. So having said that, for me, and I want to clarify this, I have come up and done this. The only motivation I've had for doing this is because of fear of safety for patients and healthcare personnel. I am here talking with my boss on the line yesterday. I was talking with a member of the board. These are the people who employ me. I have taken that risk because I think it is serious enough where we are now that this cannot continue to circulate and be hidden because we're just hitting heads. It needs to be solved. We are about to open up and start doing and testing patients to do urgent surgery, but still we do not have a solution for if they are positive, where we are going to operate on. Now, all I would say about the operating theater, as you mentioned, the ventilation system, is that for the layperson, it's very hard to understand all the intricacies that go into an operating theater because there are many. And one of the first things I said was it has to meet the minimum standards, and then I went on to say about the ventilation system. The first minimum standard that an operating theater must have, the first, is it must be big enough for purpose to fit the personnel, equipment that is needed to do the surgery safely. The minimum size of the operating theater is something you can look up on any international guideline, Google, is 400 square feet, which is 20 by 20. The place that we are being retrofitted is 11 by 12. It is not close. It is not 16, 18, 17. It is 11 by 12, almost half the size. The minimum width for a door for the operating theater is 4.5 feet. I measured the door today, and the door today is 3 something feet, and the corridor going to the door, because they've made the door wider, at the end and the corridor is 2.6 feet, which makes trolleys and so forth extremely difficult to get in and out, as you can see by the marks on the wall of trying to get an ambulance gurney, which is not what we use in normal surgery. So I just say that because I think the general public may be able to understand. Now, I don't want to get into politics about this issue because for me, I vented this issue because I was worried about patients. For me, the analogy that maybe people will understand is last year, an airline had to fall out the sky 2 times, with hundreds of people dying before a flaw of a design was flagged, and then it may have came to light that design flaw may have been alluded to in the company before. And I took the position that I know for a fact, I'm practicing for all the years, that us trying to do emergencies is what we will have to be doing for COVID-19 patients is not safe in that environment. And it's the most vulnerable environment a patient can be in. A patient is saying to us as surgeons, I am trusting you to put me asleep so I'm not aware, to paralyze me so I can't breathe. You're going to breathe for me. You're then going to cut me open, reach my protective barrier, open me up, and try and go inside to fix a problem. And we have to say to them that we are going to do that in the safest and cleanest way possible. So I see myself like a pilot. A pilot who is being told, no, it may not be safe, or we think it is safe, although we have told them that we are doing this, we know what we're doing, it is not safe, but they're saying side effects. And all I am saying is that as a concerned surgeon, I understand that I'm not alone. It's just I am the one that has hit him so much that he says that I have to vent this issue. That I am not willing to fly a plane and put the passengers and crew in danger. I know the plane is not safe and it therefore should not take off.
All right, Dr. Waldron, thank you very much. Dr. Cave and or Dr. Ford, is the QEH sacrificing acceptable standards? Because that's what the accusation really is.
Oh, well, I can take that because what started off as a discussion for the potential space for emergencies for people who are COVID positive has now spilled over into an indictment for the entire hospital that we are, according to today's press, having concerns with the standard of equipment used, inadequacies within the operating theater at the QEH, and not doing enough to keep the QEH COVID-free. All three of these are frankly untrue and a distortion of the current situation. We are discussing a potential that may, and hopefully God willing, never need to be used on the rare occasion that somebody who is COVID-free requires surgery. Now, it is the individual surgeon's responsibility to be the strongest possible advocate for the patient before them. This I appreciate, but it also has to be in context of the greater good and the greater number of patients. And to discuss what has been a work in progress, evolving to a facility to keep the patients separate from infecting the greater number of patients at the hospital, is now spilling over to where the public is now being asked to have concerns about the standards of surgery at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. I can unequivocally assure you that up until now, there has been no breach of standards in the hospital. There is no plan to breach the hospital by bringing COVID-positive patients into the hospital. And we are working with all those who are willing to work with us to improve facilities for the eventuality of COVID-positive surgery.
All right. And Dr. Ford, again, I pose the question to you about the standards, because speaking specifically, Dr. Waldron made the point and of this the size, it's supposed to be 20 by 20, 400 square feet, and the room is much smaller than that.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity. This is the first time I'm speaking, and I actually start off by saying and talk to every Barbadian. So I just want to first agree on a few points. I think point number one, I first want to acknowledge the concern of the surgeons. I think that's an important thing to do. And I always say, and I would start by saying this, that I always ask God for wisdom in challenging times. These are really unprecedented times. As you, the public, listen this morning, these are unprecedented times in the world. There are challenges all over the world with regards to how people are dealing with these particular crises, how people within their hospitals have developed plans to try to stop spread of diseases within the hospital. As it relates to the theater and sizing and stuff, I won't really speak to that. That's outside of my portfolio. But I will speak more to what where we are in country and how we and what sort of strategies that we should take from here as it relates to this particular scenario. I think, in general, every Barbadian has been following the whole advent of COVID internationally and locally. And I think when we make decisions which would affect the general public or John Plug, where we're talking about the man in terms of decisions who lives in St. Lucie or the man from Oyston, there are certain things that we have to take into consideration. And one of the big considerations from the infection prevention control perspective is a risk stratification. So what does that mean? It's simple. What it means, we have to look at what is the risk to the employee, what is the risk to the average Barbadian, from Half Moon, St. Lucie, to Oystein's Christchurch. What is the risk to that Irish barbarian who's just walking into the hospital to get medication, to go to the X-ray department, to go to a simple clinic? What is the risk of brain in this brain a patient of that nature in the hospital? And it all comes back down to risk stratification, like I mentioned before. Where are we in this country in terms of this outbreak? The way I always see this is, in country is we have a documented number of cases. We have documented now, and it's been said that we have in-country spread. But we don't have wide in-country spread. Much like one sees in the U.S., much like one sees in Europe, much like one sees in Italy and Lombardy, where they had a sort of tragic event, and certainly not as one is seen in China. And the decisions that are made have to be made based on a risk stratification profile. For the QEH hospital and this particular event, Barbados does not have that widespread in-country spread. So the average Barbadian, unlike New York, unlike Lombardy, Italy, walking off the street into the hospital setting will not have COVID. The average Barbadian won't, right? It is therefore imperative that when decisions are made as to whether you pick up a known positive patient and bring it into a facility, what is the risk to the staff? And I heard a lot of discussion with risk to staff and patients. What is the risk to staff? Is it greater than doing it within the hospital facility? And the decision in deciding that has to do with infrastructure, as was discussed by Dr. Cave. I think that was a very important part of the discussion. Is the infrastructure in place in this hospital, which has been on the ground for many years, is the infrastructure in place to deal with any highly infectious disease case? Do we have the capacity, like many countries in the globe? In the U.S., I was talking to my colleagues only this morning from South Africa and one from Nigeria and from South America to see the sort of challenges that they're facing, which are much as ours. Do we have the capacity to isolate incidents within the facility and survive? And we have to look, as we did in the initial part of this outbreak, right, at these aspects. Let me give you a good example. Two good examples. So one, in the initial part of the outbreak, before there was even a case in Barbados, hard decisions were made at the level of the Emergency Operations Center at the Ministry of Health to close down visiting, as you might well remember, to geriatric hospitals and to all of the other hospitals across the world based on international experience. And that international experience told us that if we allow free entry into these zones, these are the areas in the world which drove the outbreaks within countries, which is probably a good reason why we have not seen that sort of take off. So those decisions were made based on the international experience. What is the international experience with regards to surgery? It is different. So countries have many surgical facilities, right? So they can have these sort of choices. There are countries in the Caribbean which are in a similar situation to us, and I'll address that in a minute. But I think the most important aspect with this particular event is we have seen internationally the sort of catastrophes that has happened. We have to protect every single Barbadian, from my family to your family, sir, to every single child in this country. Right? Like I said before, from the man from Oystein to Moonton, St. Lucie. And we have to make good decisions. That's why I started off by God to always give me wisdom and understanding.
Dr. Ford?
Yes. Let me finish this point. And it's important in this particular scenario to understand if we bring and we use international examples of catastrophes which have happened when this happened. In China, for example, they brought one surgical patient to the hospital and infected almost 600 to 800 people with significant mortality. We have to use the examples. In New York, for example, right? And I'll bring it closer to home in a minute. In New York, for example, the emergency department settle in a way to say, look, we're going to separate into COVID and non-COVID. And within, you know, weeks, that was a no-brainer. They had to reconvert the hospital into a COVID hospital. We have to protect every citizen in Barbados. And I think the choices that we make would be important. We are not saying, I don't believe we should ever say that if you have COVID positive disease, if you're COVID positive, that you will not be afforded care. I think we cannot ever say that, and we should not ever say that. Decisions, hard decisions have to be made. Decision at this point is to take, because of the point of the outbreak, we have to take this outside of the hospital setting. However, if a case appears which is critical, hard decisions have to be made. Decisions have to be made as to whether we change that. If there's a wider in-country spread where we have the average Barbadian habit, then we have to relook at and look at policy change. But at this phase of the outbreak, this is the safest in terms of risk stratification and keeping this element out of the hospital for the protection of every single Barbadian, every single citizen who comes to the country, every person who sets foot in the hospital. And that's my position at this point.
Can I ask a question? Is David Ellis speaking? The notion of every citizen also must touch on the person who is infected by COVID. And
yes,
from all that has been said here, I have been left with a clear and distinct impression that some can come to the conclusion that the surgical care which has been provided so far for the patient who may end up in Enmore in ICU may well be considered to be somewhat less of a standard, the high standard to which one would expect if that person had been in the QEH. One understands the concern which has been raised about trying to avoid infection. But any one of us in this country could end up in a situation where we need to get surgery. What was said earlier suggests that you cannot get major surgery out by Enmore. So what happens to that COVID patient if they needed major surgery? And it could be a government minister. It could be somebody down the road driving in a minibus. Any Barbadian can be exposed to that. This issue revolves around what is the best that you can do for the COVID patient that needs urgent and serious surgery.
Yes, and I take your point, Mr. Ellis. And what I'm seeing from my perspective, I'm not a surgeon, right? But from my perspective, all cases must be treated on their merit. What I mean by that is, if it's a surgical procedure which is good enough and people can do it and more, then that's be done. There's to be no abandonment of patients. So if a patient comes in with a critical illness, the hospital physician, from my perspective, and I'm speaking from my perspective, and I'm from the hospital's perspective, should be to reassess each patient in each scenario on a case-by-case basis to make hard decisions. So a hard decision might mean that we might have to, under that scenario, in the absence of having an area to do that particular surgery, we might have to make that decision at that point to do that surgery in one of these scenarios or one of these areas. But what I'm seeing is at this point of the outbreak, and knowing that it is not globally, in terms of the amount of surgery cases and stuff presented with people requiring surgery, is not like a huge burden of cases. At this scenario, where we are in country in terms of risk stratification, it is probably not best to take out the whole unit. Because basically, it's not me to discuss it more than the director of medical service, but to take out that services which are also critical to other Barbadians on the ground, whether it be cardiac services, whether somebody has a heart attack and can kill them, and there are things that one can do, or someone has problems with their heart and they might put in devices, to take that service out at this point. In the position where we are as a country in terms of the outbreak, it is not a smart thing to do, because I keep saying, right, at the end of this, we don't want to end up with a heart attack outbreak, in quotations, right? Or a stroke outbreak, because our focus was only on COVID and doing the one COVID patient for surgery or the two COVID first for surgery, and we left out a large segment of the population who would suffer. We cannot ever be in that scenario. There's been no discussion of abandonment of any patient. I believe there needs to be a definitive plan after that event. And I know that plan was in place, and it was discussed searching with the surgical team, that if any of these trying situations arise, right, this is an unprecedented scenario, Mr. Ellis, right? If any of these current situations arise, then the way how I see this is that hard decisions at that point will have to be made. If the situation in the country changes, where we have a massive in-country spread, then the average Barbadian, as in New York, as in London, as in Lombardy, Italy, the average Barbadian presented in your facility is more likely to have COVID than not. We are not in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't introduce it in the hospital to introduce that scenario into the hospital because we will have a huge problem in the country. I hope you understand.
On the question,
all right, David, just, COVID to the hospital, David, just hold us that question. We have to take a commercial break. And we'll